All right. Thank you very much for joining us once again on the Unknown Strength podcast. This is episode 8. My name is McGregor McNair. I'll be your host. Unfortunately, I couldn't convince my co-hosts, Brenton McKitterick and Steve Phillips, to join us this morning. The time zone difference between us in Melbourne and our guest in Montreal was a little bit extreme for my co-host, so I'm flying solo today. But without further ado, our guest today is none other than Mr. Eric Fullstroll. He is a lifelong martial artist, PICP Level 5 strength and conditioning coach for some of the most decorated athletes in professional sports. He's a naturopath. He's the owner of a successful training facility called Body Fit in Montreal. He's also an author of a very highly regarded book called The Strength Code, and he is a family man. So thank you so much for joining us on the show, Eric. How are you doing?
Good, you. Thank you for having me.
That's an absolute pleasure, mate. So what's happening over there in Montreal today?
Oh, it's good. It's very hot, actually. It's about, now it's 30, very windy, so I'm in the air conditioning now, so talking to you, so it's a good thing.
Wow, okay.
Summer has started.
Fantastic, mate. So why don't you tell us all about yourself and your background in the martial arts and how you found your current path as a strength coach and a little bit about your journey to where you are today?
Actually, I started training around 12 years old. And I've always been into fascinated about martial arts. So let's say I was 8 or 9. As far as I can remember, I always admired like Jean-Claude Van Damme and Bruce Lee. And they were my idols at that time. So, and also it was a question of physique. So the muscle mass and the strength feats, I was always amazed by that. So even at a young age, I can remember having all those muscle magazines at home and knowing all the bodybuilders at that time. And then I started training around 10 or 11. My parents bought me my first weight sets. The old weather plates, plastic plates with cement inside.
Cement, yes.
Yeah, you remember that. So it's very old, but it's the first weight set they bought me. I think it was like the empty bar, so it was easily pliable, so you can't like put too much on it.
Yep.
But I was I was 12, and I think I was doing squats, bench. I had a punching bag in my garage, and unheated garage. And you know, in Montreal in the winter, it was very cold. Mm-hmm. So was training a la Rocky style, and almost outside, going for a run, and then after that, getting in the gym and my garage and doing benches and squats. That's the only thing I knew. And my godfather, he was champion judoka, so he made my programs, and it was very basic. So it's like deadlift, squats, bench, and pull-ups. So very basic stuff. And I kept on going. It was maybe 2-3 times a week, and doing punching bag. We didn't have any like too much money at that time, so I couldn't get into martial arts school, but I self-taught myself. Like I tried to do boxing, I tried to do kickboxing, and by watching the movies, you know, like all these kids. Okay.
Yep.
So then around 16 years old, I still trained. Like I never really stopped since I was 12. And around 16, I got my first membership in a gym. So it was like a very cheap gym. Like if I can remember, I think it wasn't even $100 for a year time. Yeah. So, but you know, it was all, it was good because it still was Atlantis machines. So very good biomechanics with the machines, but I was mostly with dumbbells, barbells, like my godfather taught me. So I still train, but I was, I think, the the youngest at the gym. So I became the familiar face of the gym.
Right.
I was there like 2 hours a day. After school, I was there. I think I left at the gym. I was there at 5 and till 8. Then I went back home, went to school the next day. Same thing, 5 days a week, 6 days a week. And then I started making programs to people over there at 16. So the usual, they came to see me, did programs, never charged, but still I couldn't also at 16. But since I became the familiar face, the owners were two obese people. So they couldn't show their face too much in the gym. It doesn't show too good. Uh-huh. And I became like the like hashtag manager. Okay. So yeah, for real. But then I started to make programs, and that's where it basically all started. So at 16, I did that for about 1 or 2 years. Then I got into a gym. I think I was 18. I got into a gym. I was night manager. And from 2 to 10, I was the one who was taking care of the gym. And that's the best gym I ever worked in, besides the one I own now. But it's the example of what I'm trying to do now. Like the brotherhood we had at night, it was crazy. So it's something that I still want to have now. And I think I succeeded, but it's something I will never forget. That's the best gym I had. So now I'm trying to do the same thing with the gym I own now. So it's a big family. So anyone who wants to come in, he's getting in the family right away. We go, we train, like a special brotherhood it was. And I'm trying to get that now. And then after that, working in another gym, this went on for about 10 years. So that's where I started to go under Charles Poliquin. And that's where I discovered how he worked. We had a friend in common. So the first seminars he did in Montreal, I was there. And then I never stopped going under him. I went with Paul Cech also. I did a lot, but he's the main influence in how I teach today and how I train people. And we owned also, after that 10 years, we owned Poliquin Performance in Montreal. He had four at that time. It was like a franchise type. And we had an investor. Charles was his name, and like a franchisor. Okay, so he was there once in a while. But there was something wrong with one of the investors. Da, da, da. Then it came to another gym that I worked in, and it followed with the gym I own now. And still going with Charles' ways of teaching, and never stopping. I think that's the main reason why I'm still in the game today. And I love what I do now. So it's a win-win.
Absolutely. And that's a beautiful thing about Charles's methods, is that they're tried and true. They work, you know, they're scientifically backed. They just work.
Yeah. It's just like fast. And that's the thing, is that you have to show the people by any means necessary that what you're doing works, and it works fast.
Yep.
So that's what he showed me very fast. And as long as you get results, you put it on paper, people are going to see it, and they're going to stay. So I never, for any gym I had, or the business I had in like a personal trainer, never made any advertisement. It was all like word of mouth. So I think that's the best way of doing business.
Yeah, fantastic. And the thing about Charles's methods as well is, I don't think he's ever been accused of getting people results too slowly, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's the main success story. So it shows. So success leaves clues, like you said.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's great. I mean, we've got your early influences as a strength coach coming from Charles. What about in the martial arts? Who were some of the guys you looked up to, or were big influences on you?
But it was mostly like at the beginning, it was mostly movies. But there was one guy I met in the gym I worked like for 10 years. I was doing shadow boxing into like the aerobic room, so full of mirrors, and was alone. And then I see this big guy come in, and he was Steven, the person I talk in my book. So Steven came in, and I didn't know the guy. So I was doing shadow boxing, and then he comes by and he said, "You know what? You should come and try one of my classes." So I said, "Okay, but what was it?" He said, "Just come, and you'll see." And he was doing private session in his basement. But at that time, there was like 2-3 people, and it was the Aiki Jiu-Jitsu. Okay, not Brazilian, but Aiki. So
yep.
Mostly joint locks and all that, takedowns, mix of Aikido also, and Judo. So I said, okay, but he didn't tell me. So I went into it, and I was alone with 2 black belts and him.
Wow.
So I said, okay, I'm going to get my butt kicked for sure. So, and then we started, man, it was the best experience I had in like a while. Like, you know, when you find your calling with weights, okay, you know that you like it and you're never going to stop. Same thing with martial arts.
Right.
Okay, so he was my first sensei, and he showed me like so many stuff, and it was like my next calling besides weightlifting. And then after that, I went on for maybe a year or so, and he saw that I was freaking out about it and I couldn't stop. And he was special ops in the army. Okay. But it took like maybe 2 years for him to tell me, and I never asked. So I just wanted to learn as much as possible. And, we built a friendship, and it was like going very well. He showed me a lot of stuff. And he was doing a school for bodyguards to show them how to to show them the business about bodyguard. But my task was to put them into shape and do diets and habits and all that to build around his course something that I could bring in for the health wise. So this went on for a year. But then he learned that he had cancer, knee cancer, and a year after that, we stopped everything, and then he died. But that was another passion, and that's how it got me started into martial arts, like very seriously. And like I love jiu-jitsu; it's the best thing that I could do now. Like. I had kids at that time. I just had like a few. I had one business, the one with Charles at the same time. So when he died, the gym went to scrap also. So it was very hard. And at that time, I just had my son. Okay. So he was very young. So like everything came all together just to show me where I should go. And that's where I chose to. Make the best out of people and put them into shape. So he was like also an influence into my martial arts, but also how I'm going to go into the business after that. So now since my son is 10 and I have a younger girl also that's 6, they're getting a bit older. So I started again jiu-jitsu now. And as you know, it's hard to find a good sensei.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally found one, and he comes to my gym because I can't like also travel too much, go too far or something because of the gym.
Yep.
So I'm booking like 2 hours a day at my gym. I'm doing private with him. It's Andrew Prada from Gracie Barra. So he comes. I pay him like 2 hours. We also have a lot of people that come in also to do the classes, but 2 hours every day I'm at it, and I'm not going to stop now.
That's amazing. So first of all, you know, I just wanted to express condolences on the passing of Stephen.
Yeah.
But for the listeners and for myself too, could you share with us just some of the main differences between Aiki Jiu-Jitsu and, you know, the more conventional these days Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu?
Yeah, as I learned and what I saw, Aiki Jiu-Jitsu was more like more about Aikido and also the takedowns, but joint locks. Okay, compared to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, is more wrestling, judo, and like there's a small difference, but it depends on where you read, also where you get your info. They say that Aiki Jiu-Jitsu is the mother of all Jiu-Jitsu, but I think like a lot of them say the same thing, anyways. But what I saw mostly is that Aiki Jiu-Jitsu, it started off from there, and then they try to do a bit of everything, but we're like, or more into Aikido, more into Jiu-Jitsu, but there is more joint locks, also knee locks and all that, okay, with Aiki Jiu-Jitsu. That's what I learned. That's what I saw. But Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it's more of a wrestling. There's less like wrist locks, elbow locks and all that. It's and also, as far as I know, is that there is more of a competition feel with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu also.
Yes. Yeah, so it's a highly sport-oriented martial art.
Yeah, exactly. Aiki Jiu-Jitsu, not that much.
Yeah.
So, but it's like 10 years ago, so I haven't been in touch too much with Aiki. I don't know where it's at right now. But I love the fact of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu that there is points, there's competition, there's special ways, and I really love it. So I couldn't say that I love one more than the other, but I find that Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is more of the aspect of competition, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yep. So, yeah, my wife and I and a few members of our club just got back from the IBJJF World Championships in Long Beach. And, you know, witnessing the guys at the top of the sport just throwing down at the highest levels is just such an incredible thing to watch.
Yeah, they're like the stamina, the strength, and the agility, man. It's something I respect very much.
The movement of some of these guys, just the fluidity of the movement, and such aggressive movements done with such fluidity and such finesse. It's incredible
and
to watch.
Graceful, and it's like the flow of it. It's wow! It's incredible.
Absolutely. So yep. I'm with you on that. I've a huge appreciation for for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Although the more traditional Japanese Jiu-Jitsu forms, that's something I haven't had as much exposure to. So thank you for enlightening us on that.
Yeah, I have to look into it more, but that's what I saw. So it's like I wasn't too much like into it at that time. I was learning a lot. But we were also doing the side of bodyguard, so close protection. So we didn't go too much in depth with Aiki Jiu-Jitsu. I was more into the close protection side. So, but as you know, like close protection is that you gotta take the threat out very fast. So that's why like it's escorts and all that. So you don't go for the kill, but you need to at least to limit the movement of the opponent. So that's why you just like block them. So it doesn't have to go on the floor. So it could be standing up as long as you try to eliminate the threat, be not with deadly force also. So there was a big part of the training that went into like the legal parts that we had to take care of. So that's why Aiki is more of a control the opponent instead of killing them. Yeah.
Right. So it's more used to diffuse the situation rather than to inflict any real harm.
Exactly. Like bring down the threat level. Yeah.
Okay. That's excellent. Okay.
Yeah.
And you said you're on the set of the bodyguard, did you say?
No. I was the bodyguard stuff is that we had to train them.
Right. Okay.
So we had a team. We were supposed to go in South Africa to train a team of bodyguard over there. So there was I think there were 20 or something that we had to go train over there. So I was taking part. I was taking care of the health and fitness and nutrition part, and he's going to go into the etheric aspects of bodyguard and all that. But I had to undergo the same training as the bodyguard to know what they're going through. So right, that was okay. Another awesome experience to go through. So I had to had my gun permit and like go shooting and all that, do room clearing and all. Like it was awesome to do. Yeah.
Fantastic.
I would do it again in a heartbeat. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So, all right. So Eric, as an industry professional, what do you perceive as your specialty, and which demographic do you feel you work best with?
Usually I have two of my main clientele is sports for sure. So hockey, martial arts there. I have also figure skating and baseball and executives. So those are my main clients, like the clientele that I work with the most and that I like to work with also. But there, I have also housewives, like there are many, but my two main focus is that. So sports, periodization, and you know how, like when we're level five, you have to bring, I think you're level five also, huh?
Correct, yes.
Exactly. Congrats. Huh?
Thank you.
There's not too many of us. And we have to bring someone into like a world championship or Olympics. So like to periodize all that stuff. That's awesome. That's fun to do. Also, I like to plan in advance. And that's the main work we do with sports. Executives, it's more of a lifestyle thing. So we need to focus on habits. And nutrition and training, it's a bit more complicated. You can't periodize that much with them, but you have to go with how they feel and what they're doing now at the moment. If they're too busy, you can't kill them. You just have to go according to what they're doing now.
Yeah, you kind of got to respond to their stress levels in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and the same thing for almost everybody. Same thing for sports. You need to adjust. A good coach should adjust on the spot. You gotta have many tools under your belt. Like you can't have a program, that's it, and that's all. It's possible to adjust on the spot, even if you have to tell them, you know what, let's cut the volume, cut down on sets for today. You're tired. As long as you do the work, instead of doing an hour, we're gonna do 30 minutes all out, just good work, good quality work, and then you're done. So you need to focus on what the client needs, but you can't also kill them every time. So it goes with athletes, it goes with executives, it goes with the housewives, it could, like everybody should go under that principle. Yeah,
agreed. Yeah, it becomes a real jigsaw puzzle at times, you know, piecing things together to suit the stress levels and the different and the different stresses that are happening in clients and athletes' lives.
You have to adjust with it, like the same with us. We're trainers. We want to do martial arts. We want to train at the same time. But if doing too much of a good thing is not good. So you got to have a balance somewhere.
Yeah, indeed. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your business, Body Fit in Montreal? And I mean, you've just told us a little bit about the kinds of clients and athletes you're working with. And earlier you mentioned that, you know, the brotherhood and the community that you built there is like one of the most important things to you guys. Why don't you tell us how you got started with Body Fit and what the name means and all the rest of it?
But Body Fit is there's two things. Body is from Bodhisattva, so Bodhisattva is a Buddha that dedicated his life into helping people get better, get healthier, and that's the dedication behind it. And body also is the one. It's like two different things, but body. It started from the movie. I don't know if you remember the first Point Break. From Keanu Reeves.
And Patrick Swayze, let's not forget him.
Yeah, okay, exactly. But body in that film, it's in that movie, is Patrick Swayze.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's like the Robin Hood. Okay, so he wants to send a message. So he's going to steal, but he's going to give it out to to people. Okay, it comes out to be, he sees it as a good thing, not really in that movie, but still. So it started from there. Then I wanted to know what body mean, because she, his girlfriend spells it in the movie. So I said, you know what, what's body, B-O-D-H-I. So I said, I did a bit of research on it, so that's where it all started. So Bodhisattva, he dedicated his life into helping the other. So that's where it came out. So, and also, when my friend died, that's where I saw, like, with everything I saw him being, like, the most, someone that as strong as an ox, but the sickness, like, got him to his knees and it killed him. I said I never want to have to deal with that or to see that in someone again. And that's where I said, you know what, my goal will be to prevent or try to prevent as much as possible sickness. So that's what I'm doing at the gym. I want people to be healthy, not only to train hard or go at it and be machines. Like I said, it has to be a balance. So if the goal is to teach them how to try to achieve balance also, even if it's not possible to get like the perfect balance for, let's say, a given amount of time, my job is to teach them how to recover or just to make sure that they're healthy, and that's the main focus of the gym in Montreal. So it's a semi-private and private gym. It goes by appointment. You need to come. It's like a one-on-one based. So everybody that comes there, it's personal training. I have a team, and that's what we do over there.
Fantastic. And tell us about the actual space, the actual facility itself. What kind of gear are you running there?
I'm known in Montreal for my strongman workouts.
Ooh,
so
it, fantastic.
Yeah, so that's my my little dada. So it's something I do a lot. I have classes on Monday, Wednesday, and Sunday. And people come and they just show up and we kill them the best we can. And yeah, for real. And that's the main focus of the classes. But I have like logs, power racks, dumbbells. We could deal with the strongman, power lifter, and all that as much as we can deal with little Linda that wants to just get in shape and never trained in a day in her life. So
right.
We can deal with everybody, but I have Atlantis mostly is the main machines in the gym. I have a powerlifting platform. I have a turf in the middle. I have about 60 feet, and we have a prowler, like sleds, and big heavy tires, like 700 pounds, and I think the other one is 900. I also have a few mats. That's where I do the classes of BGG. So we have at the end of the gym, we put out the mats, and that's where we do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's small. The gym is 2,000 square foot, so it's square. So we put everything there. We could fit, let's say, 15, 20 people at the same time. Yeah.
Fantastic. That sounds like a dream setup, my friend.
I looked for a local for a long time. Took a while, like I think 2 years before I found the perfect place, like to go and put my stuff in. I started in my garage, so I built up my gym in my garage. I bought a leg curl, like a power rack, plates, and all that. So it was in my garage. Then after that, you know what? Let's go invest. Mm-hmm. Put bought about 20,000-30,000 bucks of machines of Atlantis. Put it on the gym, and then now it's my fourth year I'm starting there. So I'm soon looking to get a bit bigger now.
Well, congratulations, sir. That really does sound incredible.
Cool.
Now, sooner or later, I mean, yeah, it was inevitable that I was going to ask you about Martin Brodeur. Now, I should mention for the audience that I played field hockey myself as a goalkeeper when I was younger, and I've always been a Habs fan, the Montreal Canadiens, and my hero was always Patrick Roy, the goaltender. So I guess for our listeners, Eric, could you please just tell everyone who Martin is, how you came into contact with him, what some of his accomplishments are, and your experiences working with him?
Yeah. First, it was a big surprise when Mac told me that he liked Patrick Roy, since he's on the other side of the world. So that's very rare. And Montreal, that's all we hear about. And there's like a big difference, not a big difference, a big fight between those who like Patrick Roy and those who like Marty, okay? So it's always like, you know what, Roy is much better because of, and no, Marty is better because of. So it's always like back and forth between the fans. So so it's cool that, and it's cool that you were a goaltender also. It's pretty cool. And so that's it. But like Marty, he's known for his like long stretch to play, because he played almost 20 years, and I think it was 20 years, and he also plays many games, he played many games, now he's not playing anymore, by the way, but when he was at the top of his game, he was playing, I think, the most games per year, so his endurance, no injuries, and like he had the most wins ever, and there's so many accomplishments and record that he did, as much as Patrick Roy. That's why there's a big feud between both of the fans,
right?
That it's hard to pinpoint which one is the best. So they're very respected, but for each their own. So that's it. And so he contacted me, and we had one friend in common. He wanted to get in better shape, because I had him for the last 10 years he played. And he started to feel like he needed to lose a bit of weight. He needed to get better. His joints and all that started to hurt. And that's it. So he contacted me. We did the evaluation, and then we went on from there.
Okay. And so what about his actual training? I mean, you know, what kind of athlete is he? Fast twitch, slow twitch? And I guess what I really want to know is, what are some of the requirements of an NHL goalkeeper in terms of training and on-ice performance?
Marty was like a cardio freak, okay?
Right.
So, he was stamina, he's like, perfect. I never could kill him with the prowler. Okay. And that's a big feat. If you know what the prowler is. So for him, I had to train him at his house. Okay. So when we started training, we trained in the gym. So the gym, we were getting bothered like so many times. Like everybody wanted to come and see him, talk about the game, talk about what he did, what everybody had their two cents about how he played or what's going on in the NHL. So he said, you know what, I'm tired of this. And he's like the best guy to talk with, by the way. He's not like condescending. So he's like, everybody that came to see him, he never turned them away.
Right.
But it was bothering me also, because I couldn't like get in a decent workout. And he said, you know what, it's nice, but I can't go on like this. And I know that it bothers you. Like I was looking at him in his rest period, and I said, okay, let's go. I saved him a few times of talking to someone, because it was getting ridiculous.
Yeah,
so he said, you know what, let's build a gym in his house. So he had when he came in the off season, he's coming in up north, so he has a big house in up north. So we built a gym in his garage. So we trained there like 4 and 5 days a week. So I had to go drive an hour in the morning, train him, and then come back to my gym in Montreal after that around 9 started working at the gym. So 5 days a week I was there, and there is not a morning he wasn't there before me. Like, he was in his garage when I came in at 7 o'clock. I was getting in the driveway. He was already doing his cardio, warming up, and that's it. There is not a morning in those 10 years he wasn't there doing that.
Wow.
Like, yeah, like, dedication, this guy was the best, because I've heard other crazy stories about the other players in the NHL. So I was very fortunate and lucky to have him. And so every morning we were there, we were training. I could do almost anything. You know, there's some people like, you know, a bit of the types, like the wood type and the earth. And I know you follow a bit Polycrane. So let's say the wood type can take a lot of variety, but they can't endure volume.
Yes.
Okay. So he's more of the earth type. Okay. Earth type, usually they could do anything. Okay. But let's put earth type for bodybuilding could be Schwarzenegger.
Mm-hmm.
He was the earth type of hockey. Okay. So he, by the way, he had to make a choice when he started the hockey, and he was as good forward as he was a goaltender. And he made the choice of going goaltender.
Do you know why imagine, he made that choice?
No, it was instinct, pure instinct.
Right.
I asked him the same question. He said, no, you know what? That's what life told me. Like, it's pure instinct. So he decided to go goaltender. So imagine if he had chosen the other one. But still, maybe he could have had the same success or not. So that's a good thing he followed his instinct.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's it. And I could give him power. I could give him also Olympic lifts. And he caught on very fast. So he learned very fast. So that's what's fun about that. It's like a multi-task and multi-qualities that he had that made the job very easy for me to do. So there, like, in the summer, I had like 10 weeks to prepare him. So when we do it in the summer, usually I do a few weeks at the beginning to get rid of the injuries, rehab, prehab. Then we go more specific as the summer goes on. But 10 weeks is very fast. So I had to prepare him in those 10 weeks to get in the best shape of his life. But the thing is with the NHL, they go, like, when they evaluate them, especially, I don't know if it's with all the teams, but every team is a bit different. But them, for New Jersey at that time, they had him as a specific weight when he won the big trophy. Okay, what's it called? I have a blank. The Stanley Cup.
The Cup.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. So when he won, okay, he had I think he was at 220. So every time he came back from off season, they wanted him at 220 because he won the cup at that time, regardless of the body fat. They never tested him on that.
So what were the repercussions if he was lighter than 220 or heavier?
They wanted him at 220. He got shit because I was putting him down. So there was one summer, I remember, he was at 215, 214, and in the best shape of his life. And that's like in the last years, okay? And we discovered a few food intolerance. And then he said, you know what? That's the best thing that happened. I have no more problems in that way, blah, blah, blah. But he came in very lean. Okay, he had abs at the end, okay? Then I said, you know what? And then he said, you know what? They don't want me at that weight. So I said, what? Okay, seriously. And I knew that he was in the best shape of his life. And he knew it too. And he said, no, that's how it goes. I said, oh, my God. But there's a lot of things that it's a bit wrong, but it's not the same for every team. Okay, but they work that way. So
it's literally like looking at the situation through a straw. I mean, you know, your body weight is not it's not an indication of anything in terms of athletic performance.
And given the knowledge and like the amount of knowledge they could acquire with going to see someone to learn more and all that, like they don't see it that way. And that was very surprising. I said, you know what, I'm doing my job like the best I can. You know what, it's the NHL and blah, blah, blah. And he came back with that info. I said, yeah, are you serious? And he said, he knew that it sucked. And he saw his body fat go down. He felt great and all that. But that's what he said. And then he said, you know what, forget about it. I'm going to tell them. But that's how they work. I said, wow, okay, that's freaky. But you know what, that's the game. So then after that, he gained, let's say in the season, he gained a bit. But as in those 10 years, let's say I had him at the beginning, he was like his body fat was like high. But at the end, he was able to come back at the same body fat. Like we went down in the summer, let's say we lost, like he was finishing the summer at 12, 13. Mm-hmm. But when he came back the next year, the following year, he stayed almost at the same body fat, less injuries. And it was going good, but he took care of his habits also. So he knew how to work around it, especially in the season, the traveling and all that. He knew what to eat also, like the old pasta before a game and like a Gatorade while they were playing. I changed a bit of that, and that's where he saw that there was a big difference in his game. So that it's mostly those habits, like nutrition around the game and all that. That was the biggest things to change for him. But training wise, I could give him like almost anything, and he could caught on like very fast.
He sounds like a dream athlete to work with, mate.
Seriously, like we came in the morning. We had an hour to train, and anything I could throw at him, he did it. Like in his where he was staying in the summer, there was a big hill. Okay, so his kids came to train because I took care also with his two of his sons, and one got recruited also for New Jersey.
Oh wow!
And we trained them at the same time, so we were all training in the morning. Okay. So it was cool to see, and everyone was pushing the other one. So if one didn't go well, like Marty made sure that he knew it. Okay, so it was cool, but a funny way. But they're still kids, but still. And we were doing the prowler uphill, sprints uphill, and all that. And Marty beat them. Okay, so even at his age. So what made me mad is like I saw a lot of people saying, you know what, he's at the end, he's less in shape and all that, but I knew that it wasn't the case. But still, it's the same thing in the NHL. If you're getting about 35, they're gonna say that you're getting old and your game is getting worse and blah blah blah. But still, like now you see a few players are now playing into their 40s and they're still going good. So the mentality is gonna change a bit, but it's still the same since a while. But for sure, it depends also on what they're doing. If there's too much training and there's you see their work ethics, it's gonna reflect on what they're doing on the ice also.
Yeah, I've got a question for you about just how you approach training an NHL level goaltender. It's such a specific demand in terms of coordination, balance, and fine motor skill, like staying in the one spot, or you know, relatively speaking, compared to one of the other players on the ice. How do you approach that really specific set of demands for an NHL goaltender?
Well, it's easier in a way because there's not too much of it's less about endurance or work capacity. Okay, it's like more of explosiveness and being there, and also to take the pressure of the game also. Because when you're in a game six and you're a goaltender, it sucks, okay?
Right.
So it's more about getting rid of the pressure. And he was great with that. You know that he could take the pressure and like still sleep at night, have no problem with dealing with all the big pressure when there was big games. So it's easy to train them, but still it was a game of flexibility mostly, okay?
Right.
And also strength, power. There's not too much hypertrophy. There's a bit to prevent the injuries. Okay,
yeah.
So that's the goal with them. Prevention, strength, flexibility mostly, and to be explosive. So at the end of the off season, it was more of Olympic lift explosiveness and make sure they're like everything is not flexible, but he has a lot of agility also. But his reflexes were crazy. Okay, that's one thing. I got him on, you know, what's the bungo board?
Yes, I do, but why don't you tell our listeners?
Okay, the bungo board is like there's a cylinder under a plank, okay? So you have to be able to control and to stay on top with both feet on the plank while holding, like trying to, it's hard to explain, but to hold your balance and stay on top of the plank, on top of the cylinder, okay?
Yep, yep.
So there's always movement. You can't stop, okay? I was throwing him tennis balls full speed, okay? And he caught them,
yep,
while on top of the bungo board. And I was making sure that he was I was making sure he was going out of his way to get the ball, okay? So his reflexes were crazy. So, and still, even at the end of his career.
That's
so
unbelievable.
He was yeah, that's crazy. And even when he, like his peripheral view was awesome, like he had no problem. He told me a story once and that he was at a softball game, okay, so the big ball, and he was sitting in the stand and his little girl was beside him. He was talking to his wife on his left side. The girl was between them. And as he was talking to his wife, he felt the ball coming for his daughter. Okay. So softball is as big as his daughter's head, but
right?
It was coming full speed. He wasn't even looking and he caught the ball with his hand.
What?
Okay, so he felt like, I don't know what, but even his wife told me that like he had like not a gift, but he was great at that. So I could do anything with speed and agility and to make sure that he went out of his way, and he caught on very fast and great reflexes.
Yeah.
Still up to his last year, so yeah.
That is like some sixth sense stuff right there,
yeah,
catching
exactly.
That ball.
That's exactly what he said. You know what? I felt something. That's the best thing he could say.
Wow.
He said, I don't know why and what, but I just caught the ball like that. But he had a few days that his hand hurt it, but still, he probably saved
his daughter's life.
Oh, for sure. For sure. It was coming full-fledged, full speed. Yeah.
That's unbelievable. But those really are the kinds of instincts that make goaltenders great, right?
Yeah, exactly, because that's where he's feeling where it's going, and that's what made him great, I guess. Yeah. Mm.
And while we're on the topic of greats, I'm sorry, mate, I have to do this to you. I have to ask you, where do you think Marty stacks up against some of the greats of all time? Now, in my list, I've got Patrick Roy, I've got Dominic Hasek, I've got Jacques Plante, and Terry Sawchuk and Glenn Hall.
Yeah, Jacques Plante, man.
yeah.
You surprised me, man. Okay, you know what? I think that because he had a different style also, huh? He was more of a stand-up, no butterfly.
Yep.
Okay? So if you look at them walking, I don't know if you looked I'm talking about healthy-wise, okay? So if you look at Patrick Roy now, I think the way he walks says a lot.
He's pretty banged up, right?
Exactly. But the same with the other ones. I don't know if there's another one where we're more of a stand-up, but him he had a different style also. He went also in the back. He didn't have a hard time to get out of the goal. Okay,
yeah.
But it's hard to say if everybody has a good argument. Okay, so that's why I can't take a side because I grew up with Patrick Roy also.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but then I had to train Marty. So I can't say that, you know what, that's why it sucks a bit because I don't want to take a side.
You're a trader.
Yeah, exactly. But it's a matter of, I think it's longevity, how they played. If you look at Jacques Plante, the game was different.
Yeah, it's a long time ago.
Yeah, exactly. But the game was different. Those guys didn't have as much protection.
Yeah.
Did you see the mask, man? It was like Friday the 13th. That's it.
That's all. Yeah.
Exactly. So you see that it depends on the era. It depends on the number of games. The game has changed. Also, the guys are like machines now. The slap shots are a bit harder now. So compared to before with less protection, I don't know if you can compare that. So it's hard to say. But I can't take a side, man. I'm sorry because
it's okay.
You know what? Patrick Roy was a machine. Also, he was a great guy. Also, work ethics. It's like untouchable. But I know that Marty was the same with work ethics. Didn't take things too seriously. But when it was time to win, he was there. He was like the main guy of the team, who was holding the team. Same thing for Patrick Roy, same thing for Jacques Plante. You know what? It's hard to say, man. It's really hard to say.
No, I can respect that answer. You sidestepped getting yourself in trouble very nicely there.
Especially if Marty's listening.
All right, mate. So why don't we change directions a little bit and talk about your book, The Strength Code. Now, I've had a chance to go through it, and I absolutely love the book, so thank you for putting it out there.
Thank you.
Now, you cover a lot of ground in the book, and in my opinion, I think it's a fantastic resource for anyone looking to turn their life around, both athletes and general population. You lay out a very clear instructional guide for optimizing strength, health, and making better lifestyle choices. Now, before we delve into some of the specifics in the book, The Strength Code, can you tell us how the book came about and what inspired you to write it?
But the book, I was writing off and on for my website, and when I had a good idea, I said, you know what, I'm going to write it down. There's some stuff I kept for the book, and I posted it with... there was some stuff in the book that I posted on my website also, and I saw that it was catching on. People were getting involved, so I knew what people were looking for or what info touched people more. Okay, so after about, let's say, 5 years or so, and it came at the same time as my friend Steven also. So that's where most of the book was written. And then I said, it took about 2-3 years after that I couldn't write a thing. Okay, I couldn't, wasn't able to write, like writer's block, they say. Okay, so I stopped writing and all that. Then my friend died, started the other gym, and all things came about that I said, you know what, let's finish this. Okay, so that's where the book is based on what I did with a bit with Steven also, my experience with him and how it got me to just like go all out with it. But if you look also in the book, there's a few clients I wrote about the experience with them, what I learned from them. And that's what I try to do with everyone that I train. Let's try to learn how to deal with some habits, some bad habits, lifestyle management, and all that. So that's basically how I came up with the book. I said, you know what? Let's put examples from what I had in my life, what I dealt with clients, and put it into 12 habits that I think it should be the main focus on of what someone should try to aim for. Okay,
right.
So they could get better health, train better, be just have a better life also. Okay, so try to achieve balance. That's the main focus of the book. And let's say if you lose it, also how to get it back. But it's mostly simple habits that some of them are basically easy, and it's like a no-brainer that, okay, it's going to help us get better. But some, like, let's say chewing, people don't focus on that too much. But do you know how many times I have to remind clients
chew your food?
Yeah, exactly. If you don't chew your food, you're going to mess up your digestion.
Yeah.
And if you have bad digestion, it comes out to be other problems at the end. So that's why I wanted to make the book as simple as possible, but to get the most info, but also that you can come back to the book also, let's say in a year or so, even in 2-3 years, and you're going to look into it and you're going to say, man, that's true. I forgot about that. And then you start doing it again. So it's just like you get more bang for your bucks because you can come back to the book and be reminded of what maybe you didn't do for the past few months. And that was the goal of the book. And that's how it came about also.
Fantastic. So you've kind of synthesized all the experience and the knowledge you've gained from working with, you know, the broad variety of people you've been working with, and kind of formulated it into a book.
Exactly.
That's great.
So yeah, it's the experience. It was with what I learned from people and tried to put it into something very easy to incorporate into your life.
Yep, that's excellent. Mm-hmm. And the mantra you put on the front of the book, and the thing that I think best sums it up is action is the seed of true strength. Now, what can you tell us about that saying?
Yeah, but like the other mantra, just do it, was taken by Nike. So that's why I didn't put it. But the thing is that as long as you put the first foot forward is going to be what you need to do. It's the action. Try to just do one of the action, just do one of the habits, and then maybe you can be able to turn your life around just like that, because you're going to change one of the habit that's going to maybe keep you back. So that's why it's just try to do one action, one habit a day or a month or something, just action. You need action and you need to do it. And that's it. So that's why, just do it, or action is the seed of true strength is the same, but just go ahead, first foot forward, and then don't stop. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Now, another thing you speak about, you know, throughout the book is principles of the Bushido. Now,
yep.
I personally don't have a whole lot of exposure to these principles. So for myself and for other listeners, could you please tell us exactly what they are and how they can apply to guys like us and members of the fight community?
Yeah, there's different schools that use Bushido, but if you look at the Book of Five Rings from Miyamoto Musashi, is the way of the samurai. Okay, but I always consider myself like a warrior or a ronin. Like I just lost my master, let's say, and the way that he, Stephen, I'm talking about, is the way he showed me integrity, respect, honor, like compassion, duty, loyalty. Those are all the virtues of Bushido. Okay, so if you live your life according to those virtues, it's impossible for you to go on the bad road. Okay, so that's why, like, if you respect first your body, it's impossible for you not to go well or to be healthier. So if you look into it that way, that's how I try to do it. it was a big part of the book, and that's how I tried to build around it, is the Bushido, or the Way of the Samurai, the Book of Five Rings, okay, which is how a samurai would or should compose himself, or just to go around life according to that. So it's like, respect your body, train intelligently, honor your words, honor your body, loyalty. It all comes out to how you project yourself and how you respect your body, respect your word. That's how it should be, and that's a joyful life, in my opinion. And I learned that from Steven. I learned that from Charles. It's a way of life. That's how I see it, and that's what I wanted the book to reflect.
Okay, so it's kind of like a set of values and a set of organizing your actions and your thoughts to kind of both create and attract the right kinds of things into your life. Is that kind of
exactly? Yeah, that's perfectly said.
Okay, fantastic. Well, yeah, that's something I'm definitely going to be looking into. The book you mentioned was The Book of Five Rings. Sorry, who was the author?
Yeah, it's Miyamoto Musashi. There's a lot of versions, if you want. There's some for business. There's some from, I think there's some for health-wise. But if you look at the traditional one, you can easily also see it as something you can incorporate into your life. It's very, there's some stuff in there that it was like from the old days. So it's past date. Don't worry about that. But if you look into the overall message, you're going to get to it very easily.
Yeah. And it's still relevant for today.
Yeah. If you, they're like the books with that correlated it to business, they're awesome. It's very good. It's like The Art of War also from Sun Tzu.
Yep.
There's
yep.
a few versions also according to business on the business side. So they did the same thing with the Book of Five Rings. But it's more of a, like the Art of War, it's the art of tactical fighting and all that. But the other one, the Book of Five Rings, is how one should compose himself and to go along life. Yeah.
That's excellent. All right, let's move along to something else you speak about in the book. And now this is one of my favorite topics, and it can also be a very controversial topic. And I'm speaking about the Poliquin meat and nut breakfast.
Yeah.
All right. So, but before you delve into exactly what it is for our listeners, I can personally vouch for the meat and nut breakfast, especially when you follow it to the letter, because I've never seen better results in terms of my own body composition and the mental acuity, like how sharp and how effectively I can think through situations just by starting my day with this very simple diet. So please, Eric, share with us your experience with the Poliquin meat and nut breakfast.
It's actually one of the first thing I do with clients. Like they could be eating shit all day. If they can't live without like junk food in the rest of the day, or at least change a bit of it. But I tell them, you know what? You want to keep eating bread in the rest in the afternoon or at night. I don't mind. Do whatever you want. But if you start with changing your breakfast with the meat and nuts, they still get good results just by changing the breakfast. So basically, it sets up your neurotransmitters during the day. So if you start with meat, which is a good part of carnitine, protein, tyrosine with the nuts and all that, it sets up your mood and your transmitters for the rest of the day. Also, it's proven also that you're going to cheat less during the day because you're not going to be as hungry. You're not going to be as you're not going to affect your blood sugar in the morning as much. So your blood sugar during the day should be more stable, which is a big part of why you're going to cheat if you start with a breakfast, let's say, with only smoothie, and now I'm going to get targeted because I said smoothie in the morning is not good. But if, let's say, you look into how you're starting your day and how it's going to affect the rest of your day, that's the breakfast to go to, okay?
Right.
However, if you start with someone that never ate before in the morning and they start with it right away, for sure they're going to get results. But still, no one is able to do it. So the best way to incorporate it into your life, I know that there's a lot of listeners that are going to say, oh, yeah, steak in the morning, how can I do that? They're used to eating a bagel or like just not eating in the morning, okay? So that's the major complaint I get. So you know what I tell them? If you can, there's still eggs in the morning that people don't really mind. You just don't want to eat eggs every day. But I tell them, you know what? If you want to keep eating your cereals in the morning or your toasts and the coffee in the morning, it's fine. But try to at least incorporate it 3 to 4 days a week and then do whatever you want on the rest of the week. Still, it's not the best way, but it's a way to start changing that habit slowly.
Yep.
Okay. It's not given to everybody to be able to eat, let's say, meat and nuts 7 days a week. Okay. Still, even if they know that it's going to give them results, it's going to be hard. So you start incorporating it very slowly into your daily nutrition, but try to see how it's going to affect you during the day. So for those days that you're going to eat the meat and nuts breakfast, try to see how you feel during the day. More concentrated, better focus, more energy. And then the days that you're not going to eat it, try to compare. Mm-hmm. And then that's the best thing to know if it's good for you or not. There's also a point also to see if they digest protein pretty much very well. So enzymes and all that, but that's another story. But still, if you start with it and you change and you see a big difference, you're in for a ride because you're going to see a big difference very fast.
Absolutely.
You tried it also.
So I apologize for cutting you off there, mate, but that's so true. One of my early mentors had me get started on the Poliquin meat and nut breakfast by having it every third day,
right? Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So every third day, I would have, you know, a small piece of steak, a handful of nuts, and then I would do whatever I normally did for the next 2 days, and that could be skipping breakfast altogether, or it could be, you know, just having something crap for breakfast, and the difference that I felt on the meat and nut days between the other 2 days was night and day difference. And it only took the space of about a week and a half before I was absolutely sold on doing meat and nuts every day because the mental clarity, that in particular was what stood out to me. The other thing you touched on was not getting as hungry throughout the day. Now, as I understand, the satiety factor or the not getting as hungry comes down to two factors with the meat and nut breakfast, which is the fat content, which just by default makes you feel fuller. But the other is the mechanical digestion that's required. Yep. It actually takes longer to digest. It's more effort for your body to digest. And it sticks around in your system for longer.
Yeah, and blood sugar also, because if your blood sugar crashes after you ate two bowls of cereals because of the high glycemic index, you're going to be hungry. That's a reflex you get to bring up your blood sugar again. Yep. But still, like you said, the fat is going to try to stabilize your blood sugar levels, and it lasts longer. Yep. So it's all a matter of controlling your hormones, which is cortisol and all that, and then it's going to help you out. And if you control your hormones, you're going to lose fat, and you're also going to perform better. So it's you kill two birds with one stone. Yeah,
that's awesome. Yep. So for an absolute beginner to this, let's lay out a really simple plan for breakfast, right? So I'm suggesting the meat and nut every third day. Now, what kind of meat and what kind of nuts and what kind of ratios should we be talking about here, mate?
Yeah, the mistake I see the most is that people try to eat a lot at the beginning, or they think that a steak should be like as big as the dish. Okay. What I tell them is you're hungry for what? Okay. If you're hungry for a small filet mignon, okay, so be it. And maybe 5 or 6 nuts, and that's it. People that are not used to eat in the morning, that's what I tell them. You know what? What do you feel like eating? An egg and maybe a few Brazil nuts? Fine, that's good. And then you start like that. I rarely put ratios or quantity because people get mixed up, but also it takes out the instinct of eating and stopping when you're full.
Right. Okay. So you need to be in tune with what your body feels like it needs.
That too. And that's a big problem now because people are so focused on eating a quantity that they forget that, you know, that's the worst mistake that our parents told us, like, finish your dish. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's a problem that I see it often. People are not going to listen to their instinct or their digestion. There's also other problems behind that. But what I'm telling them mostly when in the morning is eat what you're in the mood for. But if, again, like you said, you need quantity, I usually go with the palm of your hand. So okay. It goes to proportion, like for protein. Okay. So it goes in proportion of your body size. So girls are going to eat a bit less and guys are going to eat a bit more. So if you look at the palm of your hand and the same thickness, should be the same portion of meat or protein.
Okay. That's very helpful.
So a steak as big as the palm of your hand and as thick, that's like a good size to start with. If you're hungry in the morning and you want to eat two of those, no problem. But still, again, if you eat a steak that's very fat, maybe you're going to have a problem with digestion. So you have to look into that. So if you start, let's say, with eggs, usually the portion for girls could be 2 or 3 eggs. Guys could be up to 6 or 8. And with the yolk, okay, because you need fat. Like eggs are supposed to be eaten like that, like with the white and the yellow and the yolk. So I never tell them to take it out. Even those who want to cut fat and all that, I'm not into cutting that fat and all that. I'm just eat what's good for you. And I know that's a good type of fat. It's good cholesterol. You need some. And that's the portion sizes I go. And with the nuts, I try to rotate them. So don't take a mixture. Just take, let's say, Brazil nuts one day, the next day take pine nuts, the other day take almonds, but never take a mixture. Usually mixture are those nuts that they can't get rid of, or it's the quality is less, so I never chose those types of nuts, unsalted, obviously. Mm-hmm. And just take a handful, put the cup away, and sit down at your meal. You eat slowly, take your time, chew your food, and that's the best advice.
Okay. That's absolutely excellent. Now, I'm going to recommend that everyone listening try this breakfast. Just at least try it before you judge it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? A lot of people are, I don't know how you say it in English, but they're afraid. I don't know why, but also, the morning, it's most people see what they're eating for breakfast as comfort food. Mm-hmm. Because of the shitty day ahead. So they want food that they're gonna make them feel good, okay? But I rather give them food that's gonna make them perform better.
Yeah.
So it's could be the same, but there's a big difference. Okay. So I try to show them, but it's in about a week. Let's say I do their body fat. Tell them, just change that in the morning. Do 7 days like that. Then they come back. I tell them, redo their body fat again. It's almost a certainty that they lost weight. Yeah. They lost weight and fat mostly. Yeah.
Yeah, so eating for health, not for pleasure, people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's great. Okay, so moving along, mate. As I mentioned earlier, I feel like you've covered a lot of ground in the book. Your passion, your experience, your vast knowledge, it's all culminated into this fantastic resource for information. Now, I don't want to give away too much of what's actually in the book. That's not what I'm trying to do with this, but could you please just summarise exactly why all our listeners and members of the fight community should get their hands on a copy of your book?
Okay. For now, it's for the fight community. It's let's say you get a few habits, bad habits out of the way, you're going to use less energy for stupidities. No? Makes sense.
Okay. Yep, yep.
So if you have more energy to put into training, which is like, I would love that, okay? And that's the main focus of the book, is that if you incorporate good habits, that could give you more energy, more stamina, more strength while you're training, sleep better, digest properly, get better body composition, like less fat and more muscle mass, which is going to help you fight better, be faster, be all there also when you're fighting, not trying to remember, you know, you're in the middle of getting choked and you just forget about how you should go out of it. Mm-hmm. You don't want that. So you want to perform better all day, every day, especially in your workout. So that's the main focus of the book, is to make sure that all your habits fit with your training regimen, mm-hmm. that you're going to perform at your max every time you step into the dojo. So that's how I see it, and that's what I'm trying to do every day with myself and also with everyone I work with. So especially with fighters, I trained a few of them, and everything is calculated. Okay, if you look at their training, one day they're going to be, they're especially in MMA, they're going to go into wrestling. The other day they're going to go into striking. Then after that, flexibility. There's a few stuff that you need to work on, but at least every day you're going to learn more, and you're going to retain more information also, because your body is going to be there. Your hormone levels are going to be optimal during the day. So all those habits are going to help you perform better. That's the way I see it. That's what I'm trying to teach. Yeah.
All right. That's absolutely fantastic. So the name of the book is The Strength Code. Please, ladies and gentlemen, get your hands on a copy of it. I'll put a link to the Amazon site in the show notes, so you'll all be able to get your hands on it there. Okay, so Eric, let's change directions a little bit. We've been talking just a little bit about the fight scene and the fight community. Why don't you tell us about the fight scene over there in Montreal? Now, You've got over there what I consider one of the strongest MMA academies on the planet, TriStar Gym, led by Faraz Zahabi. Obviously you've got George St. Pierre, who again, in my opinion, is quite possibly the greatest mixed martial artist of all time. Mm-hmm. But you've also got the likes of Rory McDonald, Tarek Safadine, Olivier Aubin-Mercier, Francis Carmon, and now the Scottish girl, Joanne Calderwood's over there. Mm. You know, that's a killer team over there. That's a really impressive group of guys and girls. Tell me, what's your experience with the guys over there at TriStar, and what do you think it is that they're doing better than everybody else?
Actually, I met Firas once, and I was training, you know, David Loiseau?
Yes.
The Crow?
The Crow, yeah.
Okay, we were training him a while ago. I think he was going for Rich Franklin at that time.
Right.
And we were training him, and then Firas came to the gym, and he's an awesome guy, very technical, like he's very focused. And what I've learned from him and what I felt also is that he knows the guys to the T. Okay, so psychologically, physically, what they can put out, he knows them to the T. He knows exactly what he wants from them, and he's very focused. So I respect him, like, for all his work he did. like a true master at what he does. So that's when I met him, and I think that's why he excels that much, is that he goes into not only the physical aspect but also mentally. So he knows how to go get them. He learns from them. He I don't know if you watch also the movie with GSP. What's the name again? I don't remember. It's a while ago. They went out. What was his the movie? It was focusing on GSP. Anyways, I'm going to try to look for it, and I'll send it back to you. And it's sure. Something that you should watch, because you look at his work ethics, and it transpires on all his fighters, especially George. Okay, you see how George is. It's very focused, like energy. I think that's one of the major trait of their success over there, is that they learn who's the fighter, but they don't try to change the fighter. They learn how to deal and to work with them to make them shine, and to focus on their strength and also work on their weaknesses. So they know exactly what to do with their fighters. So I'm pretty sure that's why they get a lot of success with all the guys. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So focusing on enhancing the fighters, you know, building on their strengths, bringing up their weaknesses, rather than trying to change things around too much. Is that it?
Yeah. Because you see, there's a lot of people that they see, okay, I'm going to go see, if you come, let's say in our house, you're going to work the way we do. Okay. I don't think it works like that with them. What I felt, and when we spoke to Firas, they go with the flow. They go with what the fighter wants, and also work around it, and they do their best to match both worlds together. And that's awesome. And that's also what a strength coach should be doing also. It's not to change a person in front of them. It's to match like both worlds together, so they can work their best, and to also both work on their strengths and weaknesses. Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. And what about young up and coming fighters over there in Montreal? Is there anyone you've got your eye on at the moment?
Now my focus is more on jiu-jitsu, but I don't look into too much competition. When people come and see me, I do the evaluation. I have work to do. They tell me where they want to go. But unless they tell me who's their opponent and what they need to work on, that's my job. So I'm not looking into too much of the fighting world these days. But I'm mostly into BGG now. So that's the main people I get.
Okay. Well, talking about BJJ, in terms of strength and conditioning for BJJ fighters, or MMA, mm-hmm. MMA fighters for that matter, yeah. What are some of the major breakthroughs you've seen over the course of your career in strength and conditioning for fighters?
But I'm going to tell you more what I don't see.
Okay, please do.
The problem is that exactly what you're saying is that people try to reinvent the wheel too much. They don't focus on what they should be doing. They must stick to the basics, what's working. Okay. They try to, like I said, reinvent the wheel, or try to take something and put their name into it by just changing a few ideas in there. Problem with that is that they try to invent some, better their endurance, focus on like a crazy body circuit that's going to help them improve their game or fight better and all that. But circuit training does shit for that. Okay.
Right.
It's you need to focus on strength, power, agility, especially in BJJ. But there's a lot of things to work on with a fighter, but you need to focus on the fighter, not on a specific technique that the fighter has to get into to get better. Okay, that's personalized training. I mean, okay. So, like I said, like Firas does, he doesn't try to put his way, which is like any fighter's way, in my opinion. He doesn't have a specific technique that he's going to try to put on a fighter. He goes and melt or try to go mold into his fighter's way and technique to make it better, because he understands what the fighter needs. Okay, same goes for strength training. You need to go look into your fighter and to bring up his weaknesses. Make sure that his weaknesses doesn't block something else, or the evaluation is going to help you bring the best out of him also. So if he has some weaknesses, you make them better. If he has strength also, it's the name of the game is to make them better as well. So he focuses on on them, but still keep them as a special finisher, let's say, or something like that he knows he's going to do well. But again, it's like the art of war. The same goes for that. So you could work on a lot of stuff with a fighter, but you don't try to put a simple technique on a fighter. You need to mold yourself into it and like try to understand the background and all that. So that's a problem now. People are trying to come up with a technique, which is something they want to sell so they can get more people. But they along the way they forgot the basics like strength, try to build hypertrophy also, not to make sure, like we said in hockey, to prevent injuries. Same goes for any type of sports, in my opinion. Okay. So, but now the problem is that if you try to build hypertrophy, it's the myth and the saying is still there that it's going to make them slower, which is in fact the opposite, because you're going to work on strength. So there's a lot of myths that are still there. If you get stronger, you're going to be slower, less agile, but this is all bullshit. Those myths are there, I think, to sell other techniques or someone that tried to reinvent the wheel.
Yep.
In order to sell what he's saying, but still it keeps the myth alive, which sucks, by the way. So that's why now I always worked with the basics, which is also what Charles always showed me before. Just never forget where you came from, what you did before. It's always working. If you look into, special strongman training circuits and all that, it's functional strength. It's something that you can apply everywhere else.
Yep.
So those types of movements, like you look at deadlifts, you look at stones carry, the even just the prowler pushes and all that. This is going to help you in any type of sports you're doing. But those are the basics. Yeah. But it's not something that I'm going to put a different name and try to say that I invented something that was there like 20 years ago. So that's like what I'm seeing the most now. It bugs me, but I'm sticking to what I'm doing and I get good results. So I don't care about what's happening now with everybody else. So, yeah.
That's great. And so yeah, I guess when it comes to the myths, especially the myth of, you know, strength training, making you slow and sloppy, yeah, and all that kind of stuff. Another reality is that a lot of coaches out there, particularly like head coaches, not necessarily strength coaches, but the head coaches of martial arts and boxing and all these kinds of things, they don't know anything about strength training, and it's kind of almost intimidating for them to try and incorporate this whole new thing into the training of their fighters and athletes. So they just kind of stonewall it and say, well, I've heard that it makes you slow and you know, it makes you bulky and it's just going to have a negative impact, so we're not even going to do it. You know what I mean? So it's more out of ignorance for a lot of these guys than anything else.
Yeah, and they're just telling them that you need to work less on that, which is hard work. Let's say it. It's hard work. You need to put your time into it. But I never heard about people's having success without hard work. So yeah,
exactly.
You know what? It sucks, but it's the name of the game. If you want to sell something, it's easier to tell people to take the easier way than trying to tell them the hard way.
Yeah, agreed. And so speaking earlier about identifying weaknesses and developing strengths, what are some of the best methods that you've come across for actually identifying weaknesses in a fighter's strength profile or movement patterns? You know, how do you go about that?
I usually use the structural balance.
Yep.
I get a lot of teams, and so we need to go fast, and if I need to go into depth into the evaluation, I take them individually. But the structural balance and muscle testing, those are two of the tools that I use the most. So it's more a personalized approach also. So everybody has their strengths and weaknesses. This is going to show them, and at least they see it at the same time as you're doing it. So muscle testing, it's manual muscle testing. So let's say you're lying down on a table. I want to test your gluteus. I put you in a certain position, and then I do the different levels of the test, which is the resistance, and then I go according to that. So I base the evaluation on that. Then I build a program around it.
Okay.
And it's very basics, but it, like, I tried the functional screening, a lot of tests that I did, some courses to learn more, which I use once in a while with, if I don't get the answer I'm supposed to, or if I'm not sure about it. But those are the main tests I use.
Okay, that's excellent. And so tell us a little bit about how you break down a typical GPP or SPP cycle in the training year of a MMA or a BJJ athlete.
Usually it's, depends on, I want to have the end goal in mind. Okay, so if they get a competition, let's say it's 6 months, or they have an injury, I need to focus on building around that. Or if the goal is a certain competition, I try to, again, with the evaluation, figure out where we're at and where we need to go. And then that's where I do it. So usually periodization blocks, I could use strength, hypertrophy, power, even I can use Olympic lifts. Depends on where is the comp date. But that's how I do it. It's very simple. It's nothing really magic. It's just like you did for your athlete as well, is you try to go around, let's say, three in blocks of 3 to 4 weeks, and you work on given goals. So it could be, like I said, hypertrophy, strength. It could be also energy systems. So you work around that, but according to the year, where they're at, if there's some stuff about nutrition, you put it on that. Yeah, that's it.
Okay. So again, that's very, very similar to the way I do it. And I guess the way we're taught as PICP coaches to some degree, but like structural balance first, then hypertrophy, strength, power, like kind of in that order.
Yeah. It depends also on the weaknesses. There could be a phase of rehab. There's some rest periods also in there. So yeah, it's how you do it. It could be linear. So you could go up in volume, go down in volume. Depends on also on the athlete. Let's say Marty Brodeur, we could, for him, volume was never a problem. He could take it like properly. There's some people, I need to bring down the volume, let's say every 2 weeks, or else they're going to crash because they can't take it. So again, you need to focus on who you have in front of you and you build around that.
Yeah, that's excellent. Okay, my friend, that's really, really cool stuff. Unfortunately, we're going to have to start to wrap this interview up.
Yeah.
All right. Can you share with us some books or resources, obviously other than your own book, for our listeners to learn more about some of the stuff we've talked about here today?
Yeah. There, like I said, there's the Book of Five Rings, which is mostly the one that inspired mostly the book. But there's one of my favorite authors is Stephen Pressfield. Okay, there's one book he wrote, which is something that I go back once in a while and always look into it. It's the Warrior Ethos. Okay, so the book is basically a code of manhood, how the old cultures from the Spartans, and there's a few stories about the Spartans, which are great. The book talk about how boys became men and the ritual of passing, okay, and which makes me think about like the what we see now these days is that they give medals for participation, which sucks. Okay, it's bad. Like I don't like one thing I learned very early with my sensei is that there should be two belts, like the white and the black, and that's it. Okay. Then along the way, it's just like how you learn, and it's like it's nice. You need to get belts, and you see where you're going. But there's two true belts, which is white and black, because along the way it's just like a rites of passage and to see your progression, which is same thing as in training. Okay, it's the same thing. So this is one of the good books. And the other one is Do the Work, okay, which, again, with Stephen Pressfield.
Okay.
It's like, it showed me how to do the work is basically people who have resistance, like they don't want to get too much, or they just resist going into their calling because they're afraid or whatever. They don't know how to step forward. Like I said, the action is the seed of true strength. So, yeah. So let's say when you have to look into it. Let's say I wanted to start my gym. You start with the end in mind. The same goes with training. Like I said, you start with the competition and you build around that with where you want to start from. I did the same for the gym. For my gym, I started with the experience I wanted people to have when they come into the gym or when they get into the brotherhood, okay? So to get that experience, then you build around that, what you need to do, what you need to focus on, what's your plan to go there. So that's the one of the things that I learned from the book, okay? And the last one, again, it's, man, the people are going to say I'm doing publicity for Stephen Pressfield, but there's all kinds of books he wrote, and like I tried to narrow it down to two or three. And the other one is Turning Pro, okay? Which again, you have professional habits or amateur habits, okay? So the pros do this, and the amateurs do that. So if you want to be a pro, you need to go that way, take that road, okay? So it woke me up, and like that's why I got the gym. I went forward and asked a few people to help me and get ideas for the gym. So it's how it went on. So those books are awesome. You should get them.
Absolutely.
And there's nothing, no publicity. I get nothing for him. It's just like... He's a great author, so I really like him.
Yeah. Where is Stephen Pressfield from, out of interest?
I think it's been a while. I don't remember that much, but he studied and he did a lot of work with war literatures.
Right.
So he wrote a lot on that. If you go on his website, that's what you're going to see the most. So and that's what I know from him. But the rest, I just like kept reading what he was doing. Yeah.
Okay, it's fantastic. So a lot of praise for Stephen Pressfield there. That's awesome, mate. Thank you very much. Now, finally, what does the rest of 2017 have in store for yourself? And how can our listeners get in touch with you?
Now, I'm trying to, aiming for myself to do a competition of BGG in October.
Oh, so, fantastic.
We're going, me and a few of my guys at the gym, I'm all training them, but I just want to go with them and have fun. And but I want to do it for myself also. So that's the six months ahead. And if people want to get in touch with me, they can go on my website, which is bodyfitonline.com. So it's BODHI fit online. bodybuildingacademy.com. So go on there, send me an email, just say hi, or on my Facebook page, BodyFit, BODHI Fit, and just come and say hi and ask questions, no problem.
That's fantastic, mate. Well, mate, thank you so much for giving us the time today. I really appreciate you coming on. I've had a lot of fun chatting with you today.
Thank you, sir.
And I hope to catch up with you again in the near future. And all the best with this upcoming jiu-jitsu competition. That is really, really cool, mate.
Thank you, man. So all the best to you guys.
Thank you very much, good sir. And I hope to chat with you again.
Thank you, sir. See you again.